You're listening to Voice Actor Showcase, episode number 12. Hi everyone, and welcome back to Voice Actor Showcase, a podcast about voice actors and their stories. I'm Jiun Yoon. Now, stop by voicemodo.com/store to pick up a really cool, introverted, but willing to discuss voice acting t-shirt for yourself or a fellow voice actor. Of course, the proceeds from the t-shirt sales will go to supporting the show, as well as supporting the voice actors that come on this program. Please connect with us on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at Voice Actor Show. You can also listen to these episodes on YouTube, youtube.com/voicemodo, or search for the hashtag Voice Actor Showcase. The Voice Actor Showcase is about the voice actors on their journey to realize the dream of becoming an established voice actor. We're interested in telling the stories of countless voice actors around the world who are working very hard to make their dream a reality. Whether they've signed up for their very first VO workshop yesterday or have recently started teaching others. Now, if you have an interesting story to tell and your first animated character you've voiced is called Rock Number 4, I'd love to have you on the show. Please contact us by visiting voiceactorshowcase.com. Today, we'll meet a voice actor from Melbourne, Australia. He's worn many hats during his adult career, including titles like IT consultant, corporate trainer, video producer, Twitch streamer, to name just a few. After inadvertently becoming aware of the voiceover industry, he flew to Seattle, Washington to work with Scott Burns, a voice actor, coach, and demo producer. Armed with an excellent demo and propelled by his drive, he's booked a number of significant roles in his voice acting career. Most notably, his voice can be heard in the internationally famous video game title Battle Chef Brigade, where he voices Ziggy, the Necromancer Chef. We'll hear about his transition from the corporate world to voice acting, his journey in voicing various characters, and where he plans to go from here. He's recently launched a new website for his business, Tavern of Voices, a voiceover talent matchmaking service. Please welcome Kevin Powell.
Used to be, I couldn't sleep at night, cause I kept dreaming of Fallujah. 48 degree heat, and the sun like a hammer. Trucks and tankers burning on the highway. Then kids, bullet holes. All the bloody sand. Sweat until you're sure there ain't nothing left inside you. Sound of bells. Calling everyone to prayer. They give it a name when you're not ready to stop fighting. It doesn't make it any better. My brother-in-law set me up with a job in his office. About 8 hours in a cubicle. And just made things worse. The air conditioning bothered me. Couldn't handle being cold. Lasted 3 months before he couldn't justify keeping me. Sometimes, even family ain't a good enough reason to forgive the mistakes I was making. I don't warn you how dull it is when you come home. How hard it becomes to be interested in other people's problems. They sure as hell don't tell you how to handle all the pity. I learned to lay low, even before I got altered. Had a couple of friends who manifested, long before I started throwing flame. Saw them all disappear, once the Black Jacket SWAT boys showed. Heard stories. Shared the rumors, tried to figure it all out. Never heard nothing about where they come from. But you don't run that kind of arsenal this close to the city. Unless someone in the government is saying it's all right. They came from me. That first day I altered. Turns out, when you turn a Tesco's into a scene from Raging Inferno, you get all kinds of attention you'd rather not have.
Kevin Poe, hello, sir. How are you doing? And welcome to the show.
I am doing fantastic. It is lovely to be here.
Thank you again for being on the show. And you are my very first guest from south of the equator. Wow, what an honor. Thank you so much for being here.
Oh, fantastic. Thank you for reaching out further across the globe.
Before we start, I just want to say how amazingly awesome it is for me to be talking with you live like this right now. What a time we live in, I tell you.
Right? The ability to not only have conversations with people like yourself, but also to be able to connect with clients across the globe. It's an amazing time for voiceover.
Absolutely so. All right, let's get right into it. Please tell us about your childhood. Now, most actors I know, both actors as well as voice actors, and everybody who's been on the show so far has expressed that they grew up with cartoons and films and video games, etc., that really attributed to their initial spark of creativity. Now, if you will, to those experiences, was it the same experience for you growing up?
Absolutely. So I grew up in the 80s and we had, boy howdy, so many cartoons that were, and there's a term for this nowadays, toyetic. So these are cartoons that are all about selling merchandise. And probably the one that I fell in love with most of all was G1 Transformers. That was the thing for me. Like that was it. And Peter Cullen's performance as Optimus Prime is just, my God, like that's the father figure we all wanted to have, because that paternal, strong, assertive character, he was freaking amazing. And the cartoon as a whole, even though like I dread thinking about what it's like if I go back and watch it now, as a kid, just loved it. Yeah. So I watched a lot of media growing up. In fact, I used to get a lot of people asking me, are you from the US or are you from somewhere else? Because my accent shifted a little bit, and I found out a long way down the track, there's actually a thing called cultivated Australian accent. And for me, it came from picking up pronunciation cues a little bit from media, and so shifting a little bit towards the US, but also being careful about my pronunciation as well. But I watched, so as a byproduct of watching so many films and so much in the way of cartoons, like everything I could consume, then yeah, it actually got me to the point where people thought I wasn't Australian.
Wow. Is that something you can control today? The dial up and down the level of Australian or English?
Yeah, it's hard sometimes to not make it feel a little bit like a caricature, but I actually had a really blue collar working class upbringing. So I grew up around that stuff. So you can absolutely dial it back in. It actually puts me in a really good place. I'm conscious of my cultivated Australian accent being neutral rather than having US leanings.
That's super interesting. I never ever imagined that the Australian dialect of the English language would have that type of variety and coloring.
Yeah, I think you can basically put it, there's like a spectrum for us. It's not like the US where you have all of this amazing immigration creating these different accents regionally, like Brooklyn or Minnesota or somewhere like that.
Right.
For us, it's largely a spectrum of there's broad, which is, you know, you just get a vowel and you just stretch it out, mate. And then you go all the way through to cultivated, which is a great example of that would be listening to Cate Blanchett in interviews.
Fascinating. Kevin, what kind of kid were you when you were young?
Ooh, I was not extroverted. I was quiet. I kept mostly to myself. I wasn't popular. So as a kid, I was thinking about this the other day. I wrote poetry as a child. I was a sensitive kid, and I always wanted to be behind the scenes. I always wanted to be away from things, never in the limelight. So going through to high school, I didn't do drama. I didn't do performing. I did sound and lighting. We were the guys in the dark with the spotlights shining a light on other people, not us.
Now, I'm also introverted.
Mm-hmm.
I grew up introverted and still am to a certain extent. Big crowds make me nervous. You wrote poetry, I wrote songs, played the guitar and girls and the whole story, you know, even though I didn't want to.
Oh, I would have hated you as a kid. I mean, you're awesome, but I would have hated you.
Talk to me about your childhood and how you were raised, if you will.
So my father passed away when I was nine, and this is going to sound terrible to people who don't know me, but I realized down the track that was a real gift, because that let me escape a cycle of toxic masculinity that had gone through generations in my family on that side. So I largely was raised by wolves. My mother was wonderful. Like, I lived in a household where I had three meals a day. I was safe. I was loved. But my mother kind of let me just sort stuff out by myself, largely. And I think a lot of the time she was as supportive as she could be for the things I was interested in, but a little bit confused. I remember one time she tried to buy me like a science fiction book from just a bookshop. And I looked at the cover of it when I got it, and there was just something about it that kind of made me curious. And I started reading, and I would have been about probably 12, 13 at the time.
Huh.
And I realized about probably 5 pages in, I'm like, this is porn. It was sci-fi catgirl erotica. And eventually I told my mum, and she was devastated. She was so embarrassed, but she laughed about it as well. But that meant, with that freedom, that I could go and pursue things like, for example, role-playing games, which were a big part of my teenage years.
Mm.
And that might not sound like much now. That might sound like it's almost a given. I mean, we're in a situation now where it's wonderful. You've got schools supporting people playing role-playing games and starting up campaigns and helping people find each other. But when I was growing up in the 80s, we had the Satanic Panic. So role-playing games were kind of, that was the forefront of what people were pushing back on and blaming suicides on. Tragic things like youth suicide is something that I don't think we've ever moved away from. And there's always something that is a scapegoat for it. And so role-playing was this thing where it's, oh, you play Dungeons and Dragons? That's terrible. I don't know if folks remember it, but the Satanic Panic was so widespread that Tom Hanks, America's darling, did a moral panic film about Dungeons and Dragons called Mazes and Monsters.
Mm-hmm. No, there's a lot of people nodding their heads right now. Uh-huh.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, where he, through the dangers of role-playing, he just goes completely off the map. So I was left to myself. And that meant that I found role-playing, and I didn't like performing, but boy howdy, did I love sitting in a room with a bunch of people and just playing pretend in a fantasy setting with Dungeons and Dragons, and then eventually other games as well, going across a whole gamut of things. Yeah, I was largely left to sort of figure myself out, which was good, and in some ways was a little bit rough as well.
And not only for Dungeons and Dragons and other fantasy imaginative games, the imagination and the creativity and the community that it's forming today in 2020 is actually being realized in real life, especially here in Southern California, where LARPing is actually becoming this huge, huge phenomenon that's happening in our local area. I'd imagine you still keep in touch to a certain extent with Dungeons and Dragons and other role-playing imaginative play, do you?
I do a little bit, yeah. It's tough nowadays because I have a family, and because I've also got sort of two careers, really, or two jobs that I've got on top of that. It's difficult to find the time, but every now and then it's something that I love to do. And I have a couple of friends who are based in Melbourne as well. So it's something I try and make time for. I was actually playing in a game last year that was written by the amazing Patrick O'Duffy, where what we were doing was, long story very short, it was basically an Australian X-Files where we were dealing with nationwide emergencies that were starting to threaten life. But given recent events, we kind of shelved the game because it got a little too close to reality with everything happening with the bushfires.
Right, right. I mean, I'm seeing some really crazy numbers. It's a devastating tragedy. How is everybody doing? Please speak as the representative of the entire Australia.
Well, I'm glad you asked me on behalf of Australia. So
Yeah, look, it's a really interesting time. I think this is the first year, and it feels like such a sudden turn. This is the first year where bushfires as a reality in Australia have been pervasive, and that means that you cannot go through this summer without being aware of them. We have these constant, incredibly extreme weather events that are happening. The worst that it got for me personally in the last wave of fires, I was sitting looking at our Vic Emergency app and trying to figure out, just watching where they were mapping basically where a fire was, which was across one major arterial road,
mm-hmm.
and thinking, okay, do I have to go? Can I safely stay in my home? And that's the first time. I live in suburban Melbourne. That's the first time I've ever had to really deal with that.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's something that you cannot get away from. And I tell you what, I am dreading when the turn of seasons happens. My heart goes out to you folks in California, because I know that you had a rough season of it last time around, and I'm dreading what it's going to look like this year coming.
I can't fathom being evacuated out of my house, coming back a week later to see it leveled, burnt to ashes. Certainly there are insurance that exists to cover all of that stuff, but I don't know. I mean, I've lived in this house for over 10 years now, and I know where all the creeks are, if you will, on the floorboards, and I'd really hate to see it go. Are there any specific charities or organizations that you sponsor, that you're backing, that people should pay attention to and hopefully donate some time and money and other things?
Look, there are... It's hard to pin down one charity that is worthwhile, but the one that is near and dear to my heart is wwf.org.au, because they are doing work. They're doing amazing work working with local groups to both mobilize to try and minimize the loss of life to animals, because we've lost over 1.25 billion animals here. And Australia is this weird little evolutionary cul-de-sac where our fauna is so unique. So we're looking at so many potential species extinctions, which is just mortifying.
Wow.
So they're trying to minimize the loss of life. And the other thing that they're going to be doing post this fire season is they're also doing really important grassroots organizing work to start rebuilding habitats.
You can't see me right now, but I'm nodding my head going, mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just in my brain. That's wow.
There you go. And if folks want to donate, wwf.org.au is where you can go, and on their homepage, you'll find links where you can send a little bit of money their way.
I promise. That's an organization that you back, and I love animals as much as anybody else. WWF, I also wholeheartedly agree. Great organization that's fighting for animals. I believe I'll be making my contribution after tonight, after I get off the call with you. I'll post the receipt for proof.
Thank you so much.
All right, let's change the topic. Something happier. Now, you have worked a lot. You've worked quite a bit, 10 plus years as an IT consultant, delivering training content to various companies and organizations in Australia and worldwide. What was life like for you during those years?
It was the best of times, and it was the worst of times. So working as an IT consultant was, I can't be grateful enough for that period of time, because that was what opened up my can-do attitude. That was what made me really get up off the mat and realize that I can do, like, you know, we can do pretty much anything we set our mind to. My first consulting gig overseas, I spent 5 weeks in Penang. This is the first time I'd ever left Australia. So this is an English as second language country. And the company that I was working for sold me in there as an expert on a product that I had read the manual for.
Oh, no.
On the flight over.
That's a story. Please go on.
But I did it. We got there in the end. There were a lot of sleepless nights, but the client was super happy with it all. And I realized, and like, I'm not going to say which courses I've run, but I've also run a lot of training courses where I've been given the product information like a week or 2 weeks before, and I've done the work to read through it and understand. And I've had people come in who've been using these products for years, and they've had like serious questions, and It's not that I was lying to them or telling them stories, but I realized that there is a lot that you can learn, and there's a lot that you can figure out by listening to what people are saying, and then with earnestness, just going through and trying to figure out, okay, what's the answer to this? So I did a lot of moving outside of my comfort zone, and I think that prepared me a lot for voiceover.
Yet you're still working as an IT consultant part-time. Everybody's got to keep the lights on and put food on the table. I get that. And on top of that, you also work in software development, marketing, video production. Wow. Tell me more about those other things that you also do on top of all of this.
Gotcha. Well, I'm lucky enough to have found a company that I work for now who are willing to trust me and basically willing to let me use my other strengths, not just software development. So I have nothing to complain about in the world. I telecommute, June, for 2 days a week, typically, to this job that I do. And I get to solve technical problems. I also get to go and do, I've recorded voiceover for them for a number of explainer videos. And when we go and put together marketing content, because one of the things that I realized a few years back is that, and this is, I think, is a real differentiator for tech, it's super expensive to get the marketing assets for software, but it's such a differentiator because it gets the word out there about what the product is. But most companies can't do that themselves. And so it's admittedly, like, you know, you're not talking about sort of, you know, incredible animations at the start of the video, rah, 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 but I put together pretty good videos for them. We work together and we put scripts together, and then I go away and record the voiceover, record all of the videos, splice everything together. I am an absolute advocate for DaVinci Resolve. And so then we put together videos, and that's one of the things that I do for them on top of coding.
My goodness, time for a pay increase, isn't it?
Well, see, the thing is, they're so flexible. They are so flexible about the conditions that I work under that I don't really feel compelled to rock that boat.
Okay, yeah, I respect that. There's no greater joy than being able to drop off the kids at school and pick them up in the afternoon. It's so simple, but so good.
Right? Yeah, my daughter's just starting school this week, and I'm so looking forward to just being able to walk her around the corner to school.
Now, let's hear this story. The light bulb moment occurred during one of those training sessions as an IT consultant when a student mentioned something about voice acting, right? Please tell us that story and how you were able to connect the skills of an IT consultant, presenter, trainer to voice acting.
So I was delivering a training course on a very dry technical topic. I mean, most of the training courses that I delivered were dry and technical, but... This was the second week consecutively that I had had to deliver this course. And so purely to keep myself engaged so that I could keep the students engaged, I started doing more than normal. I was just goofing off with bad impressions and voices while I was delivering things. So, you know, occasionally you're telling people about something and you slip in a bad John Wayne or a bad impression of someone else. And I kept on doing this. And one of the students chimed in and said, "You should be in radio." And I had this moment where I thought, yeah, actually, why not?
Yeah.
That's a thing. Let's make that happen. How does that happen? And so that planted a seed that I went away with. And I had to think about, but getting back to the other half of the question, like how did I parlay those skills? Going back to what we were talking about earlier about role-playing, I make the case that I got into delivering corporate training because I started out actually running role-playing games at conventions. So what I would do basically from 9 o'clock in the morning to either around 9 at night or 12 a.m. for 3 days over a year is I would sit in a room with people for 3 hours at a stretch and we would tell a story. So I would write a role-playing game with 5 characters, a rough story, and it was basically just everyone getting together and telling a story. And I would do that for somewhere between 12 and probably more hours a day.
Wow.
And eventually, the offer came up to deliver corporate training. And I had a tremendous fear about the prospect of standing in a room and telling people about stuff. But I realized as well, pretty quickly, I was thinking it through. And especially once I got some boots on the ground with it, they're basically the same thing. It's basically about entertaining people For in the case of training 8 hours a day, the information kind of takes care of itself. As long as you can convey that information in a way where it's relatively easy to understand, it largely takes care of itself. So it's about entertaining people. And so I did the math and I thought, well, 8 hours a day? Well, I've done this for way more than that. Yeah, I reckon I can do this actually. So role-playing leads into delivering corporate training.
Uh-huh.
And then from there, I had built up this capability of being able to talk to people for 8 hours a day, 5 days a week. And I realized, I have a pretty good timbre to my voice. I've got a pretty good capability in terms of robustness there, in terms of being able to read with people. And so there are a lot of basic skills there that sort of started piling over into voiceover as well. One of the little, and just to put a button on the answer there.
Please.
One of the other things, one of the little tricks that got me into consulting as well, like God's little joke on me, is I got into computing because I had this internal narrative that I didn't like people. I was a shy kid. I wrote poetry. I sat in a corner and wrote poetry. And so I got into computing because I thought this doesn't involve people. And then eventually I realized that 90% of working in tech is dealing with people. And then doing consulting, I realized, oh no, I like this.
Oh no!
I like people.
Oh, I mean, what a story.
Thank you.
You like people after all. Imagine that. Wow.
Right? Kind of addicted to them.
You love it so much that you traveled to Seattle, Washington for your video game demo and worked with a guy named Scott Burns, a voice actor, coach, and an award-winning demo producer. By the way, I love the way that he lists his method of the demo production on his website. A 7-step process. Very transparent, and I love that about him. Mm. What was your experience like working with Scott?
Working with Scott was amazing. And I'm gonna front load this by saying that, like, he's remained someone that I'm proud to call a friend over the years as well. So When we go on the Wayback Machine to 2010, the first time I went over there, I was so daunted because this is the first time that I'd been in the US. It's the first time I'd been to Seattle. I was there at the same time to go and check out PAX, now known as PAX Prime. And I met Scott at his workplace. I met him there, and it just felt like everything was so daunting because I'd spent probably about a good 20 minutes in the taxi out from Seattle to where he was, and so I just felt so overwhelmed. But he put me at ease almost immediately, and working with him was, I think it's the heart of why we do this. It was play. It was just pure play. He was just willing to goof off and do whatever to find what he could hear and what he believed was at the core of each performance. And I've gone back again to record with him, and I find that that's kind of the theme that runs through working with Scott. He's willing to, and he has such a playfulness and an inventiveness, he's willing to just figure out, to try and find, let's explore and let's figure out, how do we get to this thing that I can hear?
I mean, a mark of a good director, demo producer, I'd imagine so, doing whatever is necessary to pull out the best performance out of the talent.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I've heard some, like, I've listened to some interviews with Andrea Toyas talking about how she deals with talent at Blizzard. And one day I look forward to working with her there. And the things that they do are above and beyond sort of what you would consider. Things like putting sort of scented candles, and like for one character who was playing a dragon, like building sort of almost this little shrine for them in there. So they felt like they were a powerful creature that was being worshipped. So yeah, absolutely agree. Like whatever it is, and I think the more inventive and the more supportive you can be as a director, I think both of those are such great hallmarks.
And certainly you've worked with a number of directors in the voiceover career so far, and especially that demo that landed you your new significant role in your career. Most notably, Ziggy, The Necromancer Chef from Battle Chef Brigade by Trinket Studios is voiced by you.
Yes.
Now, some numbers here for the listeners. The game was funded through Kickstarter and collected over $100,000. Now, you were a stretch goal at $92,000 that they achieved. The game is available on most platforms today, and since its release on Steam in 2017, 96% of the 697 reviews were absolutely positive. A totally outstanding performance by any means. Now, take us through your experience in auditioning for that role and the process of finding and voicing Ziggy.
So, I had George Hufnagel, who was working with Trinket Studios, reached out to me when they were first looking at casting for Battle Chef Brigade. When I actually found that game, I was a fan of the game long before there was the potential of even working for them. I saw it land on Kickstarter, and Eric's art is just gorgeous. And it looked like such a great concept that I backed the game long before that. And I remember reaching out to them and saying, hey, look, when you're looking for voices, I would love, let me know. I would love to work with you. And so I anticipated having to go through an audition process at some point in time. But the first point of contact that I actually got officially for Battle Chef Brigade was George Hufnagel reaching out to me. And I'd worked with George a couple of times before on just some non-commercial collaborations. But George reached out to me and he said, the team have listened to your demo. They love your demo. And so based on that, they think that these particular characters might be a good fit for you. And here are some sample lines. So in a sense, there was an audition involved, but they also kind of already had me in a particular pocket and were eyeing certain roles for me. And Ziggy, and I'm so grateful for that character, and Ziggy was top of the list there. And I fell in love with him from the get-go because I'm vegan. But there's this misconception with vegans that being vegan means automatically healthy. I love junk food. I love it so much.
No, you're breaking the illusion. No!
You can make bad things with plants, folks. And so he was a perfect character for me because without going too much into his story, he's not a villain, but he's ambiguous. And I love those characters that have some shades to them. Like when you're playing through Battle Chef Brigade, you're never quite sure to begin with. Like, what's going on with this guy? What's he doing? Like, and the chance to break the fourth wall with him as well was amazing. But I'm getting ahead of myself because you were asking about the audition process. I sent on some sample audio and they came back. And when they were ready to start getting more official about casting, they said, well, we're thinking of a sound that's kind of like this. We're thinking maybe shades of like David Tennant from Doctor Who as a reference point there, but we don't want an accent. And so I went away and did some research. My partner is a huge Doctor Who fan. And so I said, look, what are the best episodes? Because David Tennant in Doctor Who has this real reputation of being quite shouty. But I found, thanks to her, some really good monologues because David Tennant as an actor is incredible. And he has this gorgeous voice. And so I found some great voice references to pick up some of the cadence from, which is always the stuff that I used to love when I was playing role-playing games, like listening to an actor's cadences and then stealing that for a character. So I did a little bit of research based on that. And the thing was as well, the thing that made me a little bit uncomfortable to begin with is they said, look, we don't really want an accent. We just want it sounding pretty close to your voice. Mm. And that can be super confronting because it's always easier to hide behind an accent or to hide behind some source. Whereas if you feel so naked, you feel like you're not doing enough if it's just your voice. And yet that's the good stuff.
A universal lesson for all voice actors out there who firmly and sternly believe that voice acting is about creating voices. No, it's duh, right? Yeah. So let me get this straight.
Mm-hmm.
Even there's a little bit of knowing the right people involved here, but essentially speaking, you asked.
I put myself out there. I had shown competency previously by, I actually met George through an amazing woman by the name of Mary Kurek, K-U-R-E-K. And I'd shown competency and professionalism in working with him in the past. And this was one of the rare occasions where I was actually able to know how much of a difference my demo reel made. And in this case, that was a big differentiator as well. Like, that was one of the things that sold them. They were like, yes, we love this. And we can hear some things in this where if we just shift you over here, let's hear that.
More reasons for beginning and those voice actors that are still in the middle of their journey, like all of us, to really search out for professionally produced demos. That's the difference. You're hearing it here. I mean, you never would have landed that with any self-made tapes or whatever it may be. We know, as professionals, we know that's ludicrous to use that as your own, as your marketing tool.
Yeah, I have a lot of strong opinions about demo reels, and it sounds like we're exactly on the same page. There are just so many reasons to not make your own demo reel. Chiefly, you only get one chance to make a first impression with a client.
3 seconds.
Yeah.
3 seconds.
There you go.
Now, in addition to being a voice actor, you're also in a film called The Peacemakers. Now, this was a particularly a long ADR process for you. Tell us about working on that film.
Oh, it was a fun challenge. Like, it was such a gift because the voice type that the director was looking for was kind of that gravelly US accent where what they're looking for is a hero who sounds a little bit like this. And I had to, and I've listened since, and one day if I ever cross paths with Doug Cockle, who voices Geralt in The Witcher video games, if I ever cross paths with him, I'm gonna go up to him and go, I understand so much. Because I've seen interviews where he's tremendously grateful for the opportunity for Geralt, but he talks about how he's constantly, when he was performing, they were like, no, less emotion. No, bring it down. And so there's kind of a baseline that the character moves along. And Captain Black, I love that character, but very much the same. Probably one of the most common directions that I was getting towards the end. We had this shorthand that we'd gotten to. And so I would constantly be getting less ham. Because there are these lines where some of the stuff that happens in there, like it's doing the festival circuit at the moment. So I can't point people at somewhere specific to go and watch the movie, but it has some really tear-jerking moments. But even with those, I had to bite back on that impulse to go for it and emote. It was just like, no, just bring it in. It doesn't need to be that big. And so that was the performance aspect of it. Probably the other big thing that's worth talking about is just the volume of work that we had. So we would record for I think the most we ever did on per day was about 6 hours. We would with breaks in there. So we would do 6 hours of ADR work. And if folks haven't done ADR before, I kind of liken it to the SingStar of voice acting, because you are trying to imagine that you have 3 or 4 points on a graph and you can't see it, but I've just waved my hand up in the air to make like a little picture. You've got to hit all 4 of those points on a line. You've got to be present. It's got to sound like you're just discovering that thought. And you've got to remember the tonality of the character that you're delivering. So it's mentally grueling. And we would go for at most 6 hours a day on that. And we'd work through a block of lines, and then work would come back occasionally because it might be slightly out in terms of its match, or there might be something that he would hear that didn't quite work for that particular scene. And we just work through that volume of work, and then eventually the bucket of pickups got progressively smaller and smaller.
I recently interviewed a voice actor named Donald Guzzi, and he talks about his dubbing experience and how fun it was. I'm sure the genre itself kind of allows that fun and that crazy, the genre of telenovela lets that happen, certainly. Talk to me about how fun it was to voice Captain Black.
Character-wise, it was a blast. Because even though I had to work against that impulse to put emotion in there, just that feeling of satisfaction when you nail the moment with it, and seeing basically what was happening, even though everything was out of order, but just seeing eventually what happens across the film with the character. And then as things got layered in more and more, I imagine it's probably like working on a AAA game, in that once the person I was playing against, once their voice got brought in as well, as their lines were being finalized, and then the visual effects were brought in on top of that, it was such a joy to be a small part of all of that. And it was always a wonderful challenge to... I'm so glad that I was put inside that box of constraints as well, because it was such a wonderful challenge to think, okay, so I can't lean on these particular things. I can't change pitch. How can I convey this kind of idea or this sentiment for this particular line? And it made you... Constraints are always such a gift as a creative, because they make you really think outside of sort of your usual grab bag of the first three or four options.
Mm-hmm. I completely agreed. The boundaries give us freedom.
Yeah.
In addition to working as a voice actor, you're also a Twitch streamer. Tell me about the content that's going on there.
Twitch for me it's absolutely a hobby. It's not a professional thing. I'm not there to make money. But so what I do is I stream video games and I play through a game over time, and I have this wonderful community of people that's kind of accreted, that's kind of built up around me. And we talk about pop culture. We talk about game design. I've got some amazingly talented game designers who have just given such incredible insights in our conversation. So it's probably, in terms of like characterizing the feel of things, it's probably it's serious without being po-faced, but we always tend to talk about sort of deep and meaningful stuff. And I love it. It's always a highlight of my week. I'm on there 6 hours a week overall, which sounds like a lot, but that's Friday nights and Wednesday nights. And I'm actually doing a Mass Effect stream now as well. So I'm on there for 9 hours because I've got an amazing acting colleague, and we've been talking about doing this for years. And so we're also streaming through the Mass Effect series, but it's a great chance for me. I love talking through, with reverence and respect, dissecting performance and dissecting game design and talking about what works and what doesn't and where you see interesting choices in both.
How long have you been streaming?
I've been streaming for about a year now. It actually came from, this is going to sound terrible because I talked for a living, but I did I've done a horror panel with the amazing Brian Holland of Sun Shadow Studios, who are producing Beyond the Veil at the moment. And he's done a horror panel at PAX Australia for 3 years. And I've been a part of that every time. And I love it. It's an amazing conversation about what it is that we love in horror. And after the second of those two panels, I thought, I don't want this conversation to be over. And I spent probably about 4 hours on Twitter after the panel, just keeping the conversation going with folks who were talking on the hashtag. And I realized, I want to keep this conversation going. And so I started, once we moved house from where I finished recording Peacemakers in that, what with that wonderful internet connection, we actually got a much better internet connection in the place we moved to. And so I realized I could stream. And so I started streaming to continue that conversation and talk about horror games. And it's moved on from there.
What are some memorable and impactful titles in the past year on Twitch that you've streamed?
That I've streamed? Good question. We had probably a 5-month relationship with Days Gone, which was a Sony exclusive. And
wow.
I'm so glad. Yeah, because you only stream 3 hours a week for a particular game, because I tend to have two slots and I'm running two different games in parallel. It takes a while, but it means that you really make a meal out of the game. And I'm so glad that I played through that on stream, because otherwise I don't think I ever would have played that game, because it reviewed very poorly when it first came out and had a lot of issues that their QA team really bust their hump to fix up. Like the schedule that they were working to must have been incredible. I tell you what though, it's a game that really rewarded that investigation, because it had some amazing moments in there, and I'm so glad that I got a chance to really investigate that game. So Days Gone would be an absolute highlight. My favorite horror game that I streamed in 2019 would probably be Sunless Skies by Fail Better Studios, which is this really interesting horror game, which is primarily text-based, which is a big part of why I was streaming it, because it means that I get a chance to do a lot of reading on stream and just goofing off, or, you know, trying to honor the text by reading it seriously, investing in sort of the text as well. But it has these incredible stories. It's really sophisticated, and I think it's flown under the radar for a lot of folks as well. So it's definitely worth checking out. It's one I think that, because it is an indie title, I think people wouldn't necessarily think to look at it compared to, say, like a Resident Evil, but it's absolutely, absolutely worth checking out.
Kevin, what is the best part of voice acting for you?
If I had come to this career 10 years before I did, I would say that it would be that feeling when you deliver something and it's what the client wants. Because a big part of why I did that whole tech thing and why I loved consulting is because I loved making people happy. I was a people pleaser. And I've managed to work past that. Not that I don't care what people think, but I've gotten to a point where I use my own internal judgment as to whether work is good, as opposed to needing approval. So criticism is always great, approval is not. That's a very long-winded way of getting around to it. For me, to answer your question, the thing that I love the most about voice acting is that moment when you are able to build that rich interior landscape and you deliver a line and you feel it.
Mm.
You touch that live wire of emotion and you are in that moment.
Mm.
You can feel the air starting to surge around you as the orbital strike prepares to land and you're delivering that monologue, which is basically the swan song for the planet that you're on. I'm getting goosebumps talking about it now. It's that authenticity of being able to, as insane as it sounds, being able to experience those moments, the truth of those moments emotionally.
And I'm sure to a lot of people that are listening in their earbuds or in their headphones or in their car right now, it sounds like a piece of fiction, but you and I both know that's not the case. You and I both know that's real.
Absolutely. Yeah, and that's...
Oh, man.
Oh, that's the good stuff, isn't it?
Good one. Good answer. Now, you're located in Melbourne, not Melbourne, shall we say. Melbourne. Thank you very much.
You've done your research.
I have. Thank you very much. You've located in Melbourne, Australia. I'd love to hear about the Australian VO industry. U.S., it's been for the past how many years about the conversational delivery. What's the popular trend that's happening in the AU market right now?
So over here, in terms of commercial work, it's definitely going for a conversational read. And so you tend to find, I think the only thing that really differentiates is the market moves most quickly at the higher price points. So you still have clients basically for premium products where they're like, we want something that's authentic. We want something that sounds real. And then the further you move back from that, and this is going to sound a little judgmental, but the further you move back from that, my experience has been that you have these people who feel that they should be asking for one thing. So they will say, oh yeah, we want something that's conversational. We want something that sounds real. And then through the session, you just find yourself inching back further and further towards that announcery read. Because they're like, yeah, we just want you to say conversationally, rugs going 60% off. These are crazy prices. Like, when was the last time you said that to a friend just casually?
The conversational announcer delivery. Come on, Kevin.
Yeah, exactly. Conversational announcer.
It still frustrates me to no end when I see vague specs like that on a copy. It's terrible.
I guess, to be fair, it's really hard to try and put into words what it is that you want. But if you're putting together a brief, that's kind of your job.
And the adage stands true here, from your testimony and mine, that we should strive to give them what they want to hear rather than what's written on the paper.
Yes. Yes. Oh, I tell you what, I've learned that lesson the hard way. I'm not going to name the gig, but the person who took on the gig is, I'm so happy the studio got them in. They're international talent. But I was working a few years ago in the early stages of developing a voice with a studio for a game where they're like, this is our central character. We think this is what we're looking for. And I made the mistake of giving them exactly what they were saying instead of...
Oh, no.
I know, right? Instead of pausing that and realizing, oh, okay, you're asking for this, but what you really want is that. And so since then, I've realized, and there are some amazing talents who offer this service. I've worked with both Mark Cashman and Dave Fennoy. But since that point in time, when it feels like I can't see the forest for the trees, I've reached out to folks and just gotten some audition coaching for script interpretation, which has been tremendously valuable.
Now, the following questions are questions I ask everyone. I'm interested to find out, Kevin, what equipment you started out with when you started the voiceover journey and what you're using now in your home studio.
Got it. Really good question. So I started out with, I got really good advice from someone about a microphone. And so I still have the first microphone that I bought, which is a Rode NT1A.
Mm.
We're really lucky in Australia to have Rode as a local producer of microphones, and they do great stuff. And since then, there's a few microphones that I've got my eye on and I've thought about upgrading to, but it's never felt like it's been the biggest thing, the thing that's going to have the biggest impact. What did change for me, though, is when I started recording, I'm almost embarrassed to say this, but I'm going to say it because there are folks out there who are probably listening and are doing this now and feeling so goofy or something similar. I used to record e-learning by putting a laptop with a very noisy fan outside the door of the room that I was in, and I would hit record, and then I would go in the room, I'd close the door, and I would do like a slide or a couple of slides, and then I'd go back out, I'd open the door, I'd hit stop, I'd save the file, and I'd go back in. And God, that was both a lot of work and a really silly way of doing things, because I was just trying to figure out, like, how does this work? And nowadays, like, I'm just because it was the easiest way to get a signal train going for us talking now, like, I'm inside my booth while we're talking, which is a Studio Bricks 1. I got that before my daughter was born because I needed to be able to work. I can't, when you've got a baby, the last thing you want to be doing is screaming at 2 a.m.
Oh, yeah.
Either at the baby or professionally, preferably professionally.
Daddy's no. Hashtag daddies. Daddy's no.
Yeah. So that was the big thing that changed for me. And it's a significant investment, but boy, howdy, was it worth it.
What are some goals for 2020 for Kevin Powell, both personal as well as professional?
Oh, I like it. So going back to 2017, I did a performance capture course with an amazing mob called Captivate Action, based in Melbourne. And I realized, because performance capture is a medium of work that I'm transitioning into, like, that's my sweet spot. That's where I'm going.
Oh.
And I realized that I had this, I've got great imagination because that's what serves me when I work as a voice actor. I've got this incredible mental flexibility. Well, I've got the mental flexibility and capacity to do the job. And I like what I do. My clients are satisfied as well. But time after time, during the performance capture course, my body was basically just taking me aside and going, look, that thing you wanted to do, we can't do that. Just realizing that I didn't have the physical acumen. And so I've been working since with a personal trainer, and that's really hit turbocharge last year, because he gave me a program shortly before the end of the year, and he said to me, look, just to let you know, you're probably going to see like a little bit of definition around your shoulders and a little bit of definition here. And I thought, I don't care about that. I'm not vain about my body. But once it started happening, it's created this virtuous circle where I'm really aggressively going after it. And I love the way that I look and I feel. And I tell you what, in terms of my body's capability to do what I want, it's great. We went to a climbing place the other weekend as a family. And they have these climbing walls, and admittedly, they're rated for children through to teens, so they're not incredibly challenging, but it was wonderful to realize that I was able to get myself into a lot of trouble by climbing way higher than, basically, my body was just completely transparent to the process. And so I turned around and I realized, oh my God, I'm up way higher than I'm comfortable with because I was able to just climb up here. Okay. Getting back to your question as well about goals for the year. The other thing that I've got coming up this year, and it's a really exciting thing, is I've been lucky enough to get a grant from the Victorian government, a thing called the Creators Fund. We have this organization called Creative Victoria, and they support the arts. And one of the things that I'm going to be doing this year is I'm going to be start doing a lot of research and development around developing voice experiences for Alexa, because with a tech background and a voiceover background, it's a perfect fit for me, and it means that I'll be able to create my own content.
Wow. Wow. What an opportunity.
Yeah, I'm so stoked for it. Like, that's going to be starting at the start of March, and it means that there's a whole lot of skills that I've been wanting to acquire, but just with everything else that's on the plate, I just couldn't in clear conscience spend the time to invest in those particular skills. But now I've got this incredible opportunity, and I will be.
Well, let's get cracking.
Yeah, I hear you.
So, Kevin, it's been a long day. You've been in three different studios with hard-to-work-with directors, microphone failures, and the engineer smells like tacos. And you're finally sitting at a bar because today you're done. What's your drink?
It's got to be, especially after the day you described, it's got to be a double neat of Basil Hayden's bourbon.
Ooh. I like you.
Oh, I like you too. You've got taste.
That's good. That's very good. Any stories about that very specific one?
Well, I can tell you a story about drinking neat bourbon.
Please do.
Not as in, like, when did people start drinking neat bourbon? But, so I was in a very much a transitional period of my life. And I'd always been one of these people where I envied people who, when they go into a cafe or when they go into a bar, they know. They're like, give me a latte or give me a cappuccino or give me a long black. And for the longest time, I couldn't find those things. And it felt like I was lacking definition. And one of those things was I didn't have like a drink that I drank. And I went out one night just to meet. It was at a period, it was a very strange period in my life, but I'd crossed paths with a very interesting woman by the name of Nikki. And we were like, let's go out and get a drink. And so I asked her, like, what do you drink? And she said, well, I normally either drink cider or I drink neat bourbon. And I'd tried cider in the past, Bulmer cider. Like, I've got a lot of friends who are goths, and so you run into a lot of cider drinkers because I don't know why, but goths drink cider. And it's cloyingly sweet. I can't do that. And so I thought, okay, well, we're going to spend an evening drinking neat bourbon then. And it stuck with me from that point onwards. I just decided, okay, well, I like this. And so this is my drink. And from that point forward, like, given a choice, I will drink neat bourbon. And it's one of these projects that's gone on the back burner, but with an ex who is still a wonderful friend, we actually had this idea for a comic, like, without going too much into what the actual story was behind it. The title of it was Neat Black, and it was a noir title, but Neat Black also worked because that's how we both drank our coffee and we both drank our bourbon.
Well, first of all, thank you, Nikki, for setting Kevin here on the proper and the right path. And secondly, I hope the comic comes to fruition and some success. That sounds like a really interesting concept.
Thank you. It's one of those things where I'm going to come back to it at some point. It'll come out at the right time.
Indeed. Final question. Here we go.
All right.
So, Kevin, what's next for you? What do you have coming up? Where do you go from here? If the listeners want to find out more about you, where do they go to find you?
So let's enter that last first. If you want to connect with me, I'm probably most active on Twitter. So you can reach me at voiceover_AU. So that's voiceover as one word, then an underscore, and then AU. I've future-proofed myself because if I ever move from Australia, then it's voiceover gold. So, you know, there you go. In terms of what's coming up for me this year, I've got some gigs that I'm about to record that I'm still under NDA for that I can't really talk about, but I'm tremendously excited about. Beyond that point in time, it's mostly for the first half of this year going to be focusing on doing my Alexa project and starting to making that transition to making my own content. That's what's going to take me through the first half of the year, and then I think the second half of the year is really, it's a large unknown at the moment.
And that unknown sometimes can be the most exciting part, I think.
It absolutely is, because I think it's going to be based on some potentialities that come out of everything that's happening now. So you're absolutely right.
Well, Kevin, I want to thank you very much for spending some time here with me this evening for me and this afternoon for you.
Right. It's been an absolute pleasure, June. It's been an absolute pleasure.
I wish you the best of luck with your future endeavors, all the projects you're coming up. And I sincerely hope that you come back for another episode. I think it'd be really cool to have a follow-up episode with you.
I'd love to. I'll keep in touch with you.
Indeed. Thank you very much. Have a good day.
You too. Bye.
This has been Voice Actor Showcase. visit our website at voiceactorshowcase.com. If you'd like to be featured on this podcast, contact us at voiceactorshowcase.com. Thanks for listening.